A Franklin court entered a custody order 2 years ago. The mother has primary custody, and afterward, she moved with the child to Colombia, where they have now lived 18 months. The father still lives in Franklin and still exercises visitation. The mother files in Colombia to change the order, arguing Colombia is obviously the child's home state now. She is right. So which court can modify it? Franklin. The state she left. Being the home state starts a case, it does not keep it. Franklin made the order. The father still lives there, and until that changes, no other court may touch it. Which is the hidden half of this topic. There is what is best for the child, and underneath it, who is even allowed to ask? Here is the root. First, the vocabulary, because two different things get divided. Then, the best interests standard and the factors behind it. Then, what changes when a non-parent walks in. Then, visitation, modification, and relocation. And finally, the power track. Which state may decide at all, and how you make an order stick across a state line. Start with the vocabulary, because custody is not one thing. It is two. Legal custody is decision-making authority, the big calls, education, non-emergency medical care, religious training. Physical custody, often called parenting time, is where the child actually lives. A parent can have one without the other. Each kind can be sole, held by one parent, or joint, shared by both. So the common modern order gives joint legal custody, deciding the big things together, while one parent has primary physical custody and the other generous visitation. Mixing these up is a classic error. A father with every other weekend still has no say in which school the child attends, if legal custody went solely to the mother. One background principle is nearly universal. Children benefit from a continuing relationship with both parents, and modern statutes favor frequent and continuing contact. But that is a preference, not a right to a 50-50 split. Joint physical custody is ordered only where it works. Cooperation, proximity. Otherwise, one parent gets primary physical custody and the other a robust schedule. Now, the standard governing every decision between two parents, the best interests of the child. Deliberately open-ended, and no single factor controls. The widely followed framework is Section 402 of the Uniform Marriage and Divorce Act. The wishes of the parents. The wishes of the child. The relationships among the child, the parents, siblings, and other significant people. The child's adjustment to home, school, and community. And everyone's mental and physical health. Many states add two that carry real weight. Each parent's willingness to foster the child's relationship with the other, the friendly parent factor, and domestic violence. A mature child's own wishes count for more with age, but never control. And two historical rules are dead. The tender years doctrine, that young children belong with their mother, is abandoned as an unconstitutional sex-based classification. So custody is gender neutral, and an attorney arguing a 2-year-old naturally belongs with his mother has not made a weak argument. He has made no argument. Second, a parent's private life is not itself disqualifying. Courts apply a nexus test. Conduct, morality, religion, a new relationship, all matter only if shown to actually affect the child. Does this hurt the child? If not, it is legally irrelevant. Domestic violence gets its own beat. Evidence that a parent abused the other parent or the child weighs heavily. Many states go further, with a rebuttable presumption that giving custody to an abuser is not in the child's best interests. Now watch it collide with the friendly parent factor. A father with a documented history of abusing the mother argues she is the unfriendly parent for resisting unsupervised overnights. Does that work? No. A parent's reasonable protective response to documented abuse is not held against her. Safety comes first, and the friendly parent factor is not a lever for an abuser. Now everything shifts because a non-parent walks in. When the fight is a parent against a grandparent, a step-parent, an aunt, the Constitution changes the math. A fit parent has a fundamental liberty interest in the care, custody, and control of the child, protected by the 14th Amendment's Due Process Clause. In Troxell v. Granville, the Supreme Court held that a court may not substitute its own view of the child's best interests for a fit parent's decision about who may see the child. It must presume the fit parent is acting in the child's best interests and give special weight to that decision. When a non-parent seeks custody, that becomes a strong presumption for the parent. She cannot win by proving she would do a somewhat better job. In most states, she must show the parent is unfit or extraordinary circumstances like long-term abandonment. Only then does ordinary best interests apply. A growing number of states also recognize a de facto parent who lived with the child and functioned as one with the legal parent's blessing. Third-party visitation runs on the same floor. Every state has a grandparent visitation statute, but a statute letting any person seek visitation whenever a judge thinks it best is unconstitutional as applied, because it ignores the special weight owed a fit parent. And the prevailing approach goes further. The non-parent must show that denying visitation would harm the child. Try one. A son dies, and his parents petition for weekly overnights with their grandchild. The mother, whom everyone agrees is fit, already allows monthly visits but objects to overnights. The judge grants them, saying on the record that more time with loving grandparents would be good for the child. What is wrong with that ruling? The judge treated the mother and the grandparents as equals. No finding that she is unfit and no deference to her decision. That is the classic error. Unless they show her schedule actually harms the child, the petition fails. Compare a statute doing it right. Franklin's Section 40 limits standing to a deceased, divorced, or separated parent, presumes a fit parent's denial serves the child, and demands clear and convincing proof of harm. Back to the non-custodial parent. Visitation is a right, not a privilege, and that parent is presumptively entitled to reasonable parenting time. Courts cut it off only on a showing that contact would seriously endanger the child's health or significantly impair emotional development. Even then, the answer is usually to limit rather than eliminate. Supervised visits, or conditions like sobriety. And one trap we will come back to. Visitation and support are independent. Modification next. Custody orders exist to give children stability, so courts do not reopen them lightly. The parent seeking change bears the burden, and the test has two steps. A substantial or material change in circumstances since the last order. And that changing custody now serves the child's best interests. Both are required, which is why a mother loses at step one. Her only ground for sole legal custody is the same argument she and the father have always had, from before the decree. That is not a change. Two refinements. The facts must have been previously unknown or genuinely arisen since the order. And a parent cannot manufacture a change through voluntary conduct and then use it as leverage. Many states also set a higher bar for moving a child than for adjusting a calendar. And some go further. The same Uniform Act, at Section 409, bars a motion to modify within 2 years of a prior order. The exception is where there is reason to believe the child's present environment may seriously endanger the child. The most common modification fight is relocation. The custodial parent wants to move a long distance for a job or a marriage, and it would upend the other parent's contact. Most states require advance notice, and if the other parent objects, the court decides under best interests. It balances the moving parent's reasons, good faith, and legitimate purpose, against harm to the child's relationship with the other parent. Then it asks whether that bond can be preserved another way: extended summers, holidays, virtual contact. And no both burden approaches because there is no national rule. Some states make the relocating parent show the move benefits the child. Others give a primary custodian a presumptive right to move and make the objector prove detriment. This is where the exam most often hands you a statute. Now, the power track, where quiet points are won. Picture a parent unhappy with how things are going, who scoops up the child, drives to a new state, and files there, hoping for a friendlier judge. Without rules, two states issue conflicting orders, and the child gets yo-yoed. Two laws prevent that: the Uniform Child Custody Jurisdiction and Enforcement Act, adopted in virtually every state, and the Parental Kidnapping Prevention Act, a federal statute. Together, they enforce one promise. At any given time, only one state has authority over a child's custody. And this is about which court may act, separate from the merits entirely. For an initial order, the home state has priority. That means where the child lived with a parent for at least 6 consecutive months immediately before filing. For an infant under 6 months old, where the child has lived since birth. A short temporary absence still counts. And a state that was the home state within the past 6 months still qualifies, if the child has left but a parent stayed. That blocks a parent from manufacturing home state jurisdiction by moving fast. Below it, significant connection, used only if there is no home state or it declines. Then, a more appropriate forum default. Which brings us back to Franklin and Columbia. Once a state properly makes a custody order, it keeps exclusive continuing jurisdiction, and no other state may modify it. That holds until the original court finds nobody has a significant connection there, or any court finds the child and the parents no longer live there. So as long as one parent stays in the decree state and stays connected, that state controls modification. Columbia's fresh home state status loses. Two qualifications: temporary emergency jurisdiction. A state where the child is physically present may act if the child has been abandoned, or if emergency action is needed because the child, a sibling, or a parent faces abuse. But it is a stopgap, lasting only until a court with home state or continuing jurisdiction can act. It never becomes permanent control. And a court with jurisdiction can still step aside, declining as an inconvenient forum, or for unclean hands where the party invoking it wrongfully took or hid the child. You cannot grab the child, hide out for 6 months, and be rewarded with a friendly court. Behind all of it stands the federal act, forbidding every state from modifying an order another state made consistently with it. Last, enforcement. Within a state, the tool is civil contempt. A parent who refuses to return the child can be hauled back, fined, even jailed until she complies. Across state lines, register the out-of-state order and ask for expedited enforcement. So a father whose child is not returned after a summer visit does not start a new case. He registers, and that court enforces without relitigating the merits, and can issue a warrant to take physical custody if there is a risk of flight. A word on authorities. This episode named one case, Troxell versus Granville, and only because the special weight rule is genuinely constitutional law you need by name. Next Gen questions put you in the lawyer's chair with a messy family and ask what a court should do. They will not ask you for case names. What they may hand you is a statute, most likely on relocation or grandparent visitation. If you keep only 3 things, keep these. The 2 tracks, merits and power, run separately every time. The nexus test, because a parent's private life counts only where it touches the child, and exclusive continuing jurisdiction, because home state starts a case and does not keep it. Now the traps, straight from the examiner's favorites. 1. Applying an old maternal or tender years preference. Custody is gender neutral. 2. Letting a parent's morality, religion, or new partner decide the case without a showing it affects the child. 3. Treating a parent and a non-parent as equals, when a fit parent gets a presumption and special weight. 4. Allowing self-help. Withholding visitation for unpaid support or withholding support for denied visitation. Both wrong. 5. Confusing legal custody, which is decisions, with physical custody, which is residence. 6. Skipping the substantial change step and jumping straight to best interests on a modification. 7. Letting the child's new state modify an order while the original state still holds exclusive continuing jurisdiction. And 8. Treating temporary emergency jurisdiction as though it granted permanent authority. This topic is starred, so expect no statute for the core standards. The factors, the modification two-step, and the jurisdiction ladder all have to be cold. Time for the quick check, and this one comes straight from the Bargo question bank. A custodial mother is frustrated that the father has fallen months behind on court-ordered child support. So she refuses to let him exercise his scheduled visitation, telling him he can see the child once he pays. He retaliates by announcing he will stop paying support for as long as she blocks his time. Each thinks the other's breach excuses their own. Which statement correctly describes what they owe? Option 1. The mother may withhold visitation until the father pays the overdue support. Option 2. Both parents may suspend their obligations until they negotiate a new arrangement. Option 3. Both obligations are independent, so neither may use self-help. Pause here if you want a moment. The answer is option 3. Visitation and child support are legally independent obligations. A custodial parent may not withhold visitation because support is unpaid, and a non-custodial parent may not stop paying because visitation is denied. The remedy for either is to go back to court through a contempt or enforcement action. Never self-help. Option 1 endorses the custodial parent's retaliation, and arrears never justify cutting off a child's time with a parent. Option 2 lets both suspend by private stalemate, harming the child and defying orders. The child's needs do not rise or fall with the adult's grievances. There are 30-plus more questions on this topic alone, each explained. 5 things to take away. 1. 2 axes. Legal custody is decisions, physical custody is residence, and each can be sole or joint. 2. Best interests governs between parents, gender neutral, with a mature child's preference weighed, but never controlling, and a parent's private life counting only through the nexus test. 3. The moment a non-parent appears, a fit parent's decision gets special weight, and a non-parent seeking custody must show unfitness or extraordinary circumstances. 4. Modification is a two-step. Substantial change first, best interests second, and relocation is where that fight usually happens. 5. Run the power track separately. Home state for an initial order, exclusive continuing jurisdiction for modifying one, emergency jurisdiction only as a stopgap, and registration plus full faith and credit to enforce across a line. Which is why that Colombia petition goes nowhere. 18 months made Colombia the home state, and Franklin still owns the order, because the father never left. Ask who may decide before you ask what is best. Next time, parentage. Practice this topic with more than 2,900 exam-style questions, free to start, at nextgenbargo.com. This episode is for education and exam preparation only, not legal advice, and we are not affiliated with or endorsed by the NCBE or any bar examining authority.